Welcome to Human Rights and the Digital, a podcast where we present voices and perspectives of human rights defenders in Uganda. We focus on how technology is being used to the realization of human rights. To learn more, please visit www.digitalhumanrightslab.org. This podcast is supported by the Digital Human Rights Lab. Please be sure to subscribe. Welcome to another episode of Human Rights and the Digital Podcast. I am your host, Philip Ayazika.
And I am Daniel Odongo.
Well, Daniel Odongo, welcome so much. Welcome to the set.
Thank you very much, Philip.
To our listeners, there's a new voice to the podcast today. That strange voice, deep voice you've heard. We have a new co-host today. Allow me to introduce my co-host today, who is Daniel Odongo, who is sitting in today for Charity Mogasha, who is not feeling well. Please introduce yourself, Daniel, to the listeners.
Thank you, Philip, and hello, listeners, today. My name is Daniel Odongo. I'm an engagement lead with the Digital Human Rights Lab. I have a very strong passion for working with rural communities. Inclusion is a subject I'm passionate about, especially with the perspective of the underserved communities. So I'm excited to be here today.
Well, you're in the right podcast. Today, our conversation is situated around something like that you've mentioned. But we are very excited. We've taken off some time to reevaluate the podcast and bring you new content. And I'm glad to announce today that this will mark the beginning of season 2 of our podcast. It's been a long journey. We've produced several episodes for season 1, and today we are glad to kick off season 2. As we move forward, look forward to lots of amazing guests coming on board. Today we have a very amazing guest as well, as we shall tell you moving forward. We're super excited.
Interesting. Thank you, Philip. Joining us today are two ladies, Dr. Pamela Nezimana, Senior Education Officer in charge of Inclusive Education at the Ministry of Education, and Bonita Nyamwire, a research manager at Policy Uganda. You are very welcome. Could you please say hello to the listeners?
Thank you very much. As he has said, I'm Dr. Pamela Nezimana from the Ministry of Education and Sports. In the Department of Special Needs and Inclusive Education. I work as a senior education officer, and I'm also a person with disability who is a disability activist. I'm happy to be here, and I hope that the listeners are listening and will be able to catch up with us. Thank you.
Thank you, our hosts. We are glad to be here. I am happy to be on this podcast. Hello, our listeners. My name is Bonita Nyamwire. I work for Policy as a research manager. I am very passionate about research. I have done research for so many years. It used to be in health, but now I am in social and behavioral research, and glad to lead a research on persons with disabilities. Glad to be on this podcast to talk about it.
Okay, thank you so much, Bonita. Like Bonita has mentioned, you can see we have very amazing guests today. And today we discuss access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technologies by persons with disabilities, inclusion of persons with disabilities in the digital society, as well as access to ICTs and assistive technologies is part of the realization and promotion of human rights, like freedoms of association, freedoms of speech, expression, and associating online, as well as fulfillment of other rights like right to education, health, and employment. To date, persons with disabilities still face a multitude of barriers that hinder them from access to education, health services, information, and employment opportunities. And this is all as a result of failure to access and use ICTs and assistive technologies. Researchers like Bonita, who we have on set here, and she will back this up, have it that majority of ICTs and assistive technologies in Uganda are imported, with only a handful being locally manufactured in the country. Doctor, you'll speak to that. I don't know if that is true. But also, moving forward, even with the various interventions like the ICT policy for disability access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technologies still remains low in Uganda. According to UBOS, only 5% of persons with disabilities are able to access the internet, 34% own mobile phones, and only 13% of the persons with disabilities countrywide can access electricity, which is vital for them to use these ICTs. Today, again, like our guests have introduced themselves, we are joined by two amazing ladies that are doing great work in as much as lobbying and advocating for digital inclusion for persons with disabilities is concerned. We ask a very pertinent question. One, how do we bridge the digital divide for persons with disabilities, as well as a way to achieve an inclusive digital economy?
Our topic today is a conversation that we need to localize so as to make our communities more inclusive when it comes to issues of persons with disabilities. So in layman's language, who is a person with disability and what are ICTs and assistive technologies?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. To me, I may not even use a layman's language, because who is a person with disability has been provided for in the Persons with Disabilities Act 2020. So a person with disabilities, someone with limitations in performing activities of daily living that seem normal for other people. And it can either be physical, mental, sensory, and other parts of the body that may be affected. And then when it comes to assistive technologies, these are technologies that were designed to help persons with disabilities to access information, to be able to communicate while using those assistive technologies. For example, for the physically handicapped, we may have what we call assistive technology, which provides physical assistance. And while others may be providing help for an individual to be able to learn and acquire knowledge and skills at the same level like others. Some of the assistive technologies that support persons with disabilities include hearing aids for persons with hearing impairment. So when an assessment has been done, a person with a hearing impairment may be qualified to use a hearing aid to help the person to be able to hear. And then we have the wheelchairs, which help persons with physical disabilities to move around. And many others, like screen zoom, where a person with the visual impairment and maybe has low vision can be able to zoom and be able to see something or information on a computer. And then when it comes to ICT, ICT is a broad term which refers to information and technology, being able to communicate, being able to access internet and use of computers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Doctor has really summed it up about who is a person with a disability, what assistive devices are, and what ICTs are. I can just add something very little about a person with a disability, that everyone is likely to experience disability, either permanently or temporarily, at some point in their life. Yeah, so if you didn't experience it, maybe from it, if it wasn't congenital or at birth, but it can come up. So each one of us is a candidate, I should say. And then also I can add that disabilities may be visible or invisible. And just like I earlier said, onset can be at birth or during childhood, working age years, or old age. And she already gave the examples, which was very amazing examples. And then to add more on the assistive technology examples that she talked about, there are like other things, other devices that are used by people with a physical disability in terms of artificial limbs, an artificial leg, an artificial arm, something to support the foot down there, and so on and so forth. And then others for people with cognitive impairment. Yeah, so those are the assistive devices I can add on. And then more on ICTs, there's, of course, internet, in terms of wireless, cell phones, computers, software. She talked about video conferencing, social networking, and other media applications and services that enable users to access, retrieve, store, transmit, and manipulate information in a digital form.
Thank you so much, Bonita. That was very informative. Thank you so much. And as we move forward, there's something I would want sort of to clarify on. There are trends to issues. And in the past, I think people had normalized calling persons with disabilities or people with disabilities, calling them PWDs. What do you have to say to that?
PWDs is an acronym, mm-hmm. and it should be written in a capital.
Okay.
P and D, W should be small,
okay.
and then D, and then okay. small s. So when they say PWD, it's an acronym for persons with disabilities.
Mm.
And if you are using it for the first time, it is always advised that you write it in full, persons with disabilities, and then in bracket, PWDs, so that people are aware. And when you keep saying PWDs, people know that you are talking about persons with disabilities.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I think it is very clear now to our listeners how it should be mentioned and how to use the acronym and how we're referring when referring to persons with disabilities. To you, Bonita, you have done a research study where you are looking at the use of ICT and access of ICTs and assistive technologies by persons with disabilities. And the results of the study have indicated that among the factors that affect access and use of ICTs and assistive technologies is the high cost of these devices, the lack of awareness of the existing policies and strategies by policymakers and other stakeholders. Also, findings from your study revealed that Uganda is not explicit about ICTs and assistive technologies for persons with disabilities, despite having a policy in place, the policy that we've already talked about. The inadequate access and use of ICTs and assistive technologies hinders persons with disabilities capacity and opportunity to live independently, as well as experience equal and full participation in society. So I want to ask you, Bonita, from the hard facts of your research work with policy and the Digital Human Rights Lab, do ICTs and assistive technologies actually contribute to the development and well-being of persons with disabilities? Or is it something people just say? But do they actually have a role to play when it comes to the well-being and the development of persons with disabilities?
Of course they do. They do so much. They do. Assistive technologies, when appropriate to the user and the user's environment, and here I am talking about a person with a disability, they have been shown to be powerful tools to increase independence and improve participation in acquiring information, in obtaining services, and so on and so forth. So, for instance, in our study, there were some people who have used assistive devices and are benefiting from them, like hearing aids. They were among the assistive devices that are commonly used in the area where we did the study. And for your information, actually, we did the study in northern Uganda, in Acholi region, in four districts. That is Gulu, Omoro, Nwoya, and Padel. So in those communities, most of the persons with disabilities are using hearing aids that were distributed by the government of Uganda, and they are helping them to participate, to take part in activities in society, but also to be able to live independently, to be able to hear what the other person is communicating, to be able to access information, and others are also using those with limited mobility. They find that assistive technologies create greater possibilities and opportunities for them to participate in the community. A person has a wheelchair, they have crutches, they are able to move. Also in education and employment, we found out, for instance, that learners who go to Gulu High School, a school in Gulu District where there is a high-tech lab that is being used by learners that are visually impaired. They are able to participate in education, to learn, just like the other learners. Yeah. So for people with hearing impairments, provision of a hearing aid is associated with improved function, participation, and user satisfaction. Learners with special needs, like the visually impaired, are able to use specially designed Braille keyboards, Victor readers, the slate and stylus, the screen reader applications like Job Access with Speech, that is JAWS. They are able to use NVDA. To be able to learn like the others, to be able to participate and take part in acquiring services just like others. There's a visually impaired person, for instance, working at Gulu District Headquarters because he has JAWS installed on his laptop. So he's able to do work and deliver just like the others. So true, Philip, assistive devices, yes, they do an amazing job for persons with disabilities. They make the miracle for persons with disabilities.
And to our audience, this is just to remind you that this report is actually available on the Digital Human Rights Lab website under the Resources tab. And to you, Dr. Pamela, what are some of the existing and operational interventions that have emerged to ensure that persons with disabilities have proper access and use of ICTs and assistive technologies?
Thank you very much. I will say that for a person with disability, using ICT and assistive technology is something that can enable the person to be able to participate fully within the community and within the environment where they are learning. And the interventions that we have done, Madam had already mentioned it. We have that digital lab from Guru High School, where learners with visual impairment can easily participate and even excel in learning and in performance. So for the interventions, the Ministry of Education provided hearing aid, as she has said, through the support from Global Partnership Education. And the receiving of the hearing aid has enabled some children with hearing impairment excel compared to previous performance before they had hearing aid. In some of the schools we have visited, you find that even a child who had never spoke because of the hearing aid, the teachers were trained how to teach learners with hearing impairment how to talk through speech therapy. So you find that with the use of hearing aid, a child who never talked is able to say something and is able to pronounce some words. Another one which we did, the intervention, was through the support of UNICEF, and it is a digitalized adaptive materials for learners with the hearing impairment, visual impairment, low vision, and hard of hearing. And these materials can be used by any child because when they are projected, you will see their sign language, you will see their Zoom text, you will see their text running down, and you will see there a child with visual impairment listening through audio. So the adaptive digitalized materials, it's an intervention that the ministry carried out in 20 primary schools. And we are planning to see how we can scale it out because it has shown that learners in those schools are able to participate and they have improved in their performance. And then another one is the vocationalization of education, which we have through Government of Uganda Development Program on Inclusive Education, where we have provided Victor readers and SD cards. So we put the materials in the Victor reader, and the child will be in class using the Victor reader to read the whole textbook, because most schools lacked Braille textbooks. At the same time, a child can use the Victor reader to record the voice of the teacher. And then when he goes to sleep, if he has not understood, he will begin listening. So it makes their learning be fully participative and improves their participation and their performance. Thank you.
Dr. Pamela, could you tell us more about the National Inclusive Education Policy?
Yeah, thank you very much. The Ministry of Education and Sports is in the process of developing the National Inclusive Education Policy, which has reached the level of approvals. We have already done regional consultations, national consultations, and approval levels. We have remained with the top management, which is chaired by the Minister of Education and Sports, the First Lady. And once it is presented in a top management, it will only go to cabinet for approval. Why did we come up with this National Inclusive Education Policy? Was that there were so many children, especially the vulnerable, not only those with disabilities, but there are even others like a girl who produces at a younger age, a girl who gets married at early age. What will be their fate? So the National Inclusive Education is covering all vulnerable and disadvantaged children. So we feel as a ministry, once it is approved, all the challenges that we are mentioning will be worked on. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Bonita, I want to talk to you now. So building on what Dr. Pamela has told us, building on Dr. Pamela's submission, from your experience interacting with persons with disabilities over the years, you've done several researches across the country and most recently in the Acheri region. What is the level of awareness on the ability, on the availability of these ICTs, of these policies, as well as the assistive technologies by persons with disabilities? Do they actually know their existence, or is the government telling us these things? So is what Doctor saying actually visible on the ground? Do people understand, are people using these ICTs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Philip. Doctor talked about some beautiful policies. Uganda has very beautiful policies, the ones that Dr. Pamela has mentioned and more others. And so the policies exist on paper. So just a few of the people that we interviewed, because our sample was about 373 participants, and only 2.7% knew about existing ICT policies and strategies for persons with disabilities. Mm. So a bigger percentage, above 50%, 69%, did not know anything. They have never heard that there is a policy on ICT or there is a strategy to enable them access and use ICTs and assistive devices as persons with disabilities. Yes, so even the 2.7%, we believe they are these, the one we may say they have a higher level of education, so they work in the government, because we interviewed everybody that was had a disability, irrespective of where they are employed or not employed. But again, most of them were not employed. Most of them have low levels of education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just that 2.7% are aware of ICT policies and strategies for persons with disabilities. But also on the ICTs, yes, the ICTs, they know in terms of a computer, they know, most of them have used the mobile phone, they have used in terms of a feature phone, the feature phone which we normally call
Katochi,
Kabiliti here in Uganda, and then also the smartphone. So that one, the awareness, the knowledge about it is very high. But when it comes to assistive devices, the knowledge is also very low. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of them know about the hearing aid, and we believe it is because it was widely distributed in that region. So about 55% persons of the ones that we interviewed, they know about the hearing aid, which is very encouraging that it was given to them. And so even when someone is not using them, but at least they know about it. Mm. And then 25% knew about the audio recorder. They know that there is something that can be used to record information, and then it is transferred maybe to a phone or to a computer, and then they can listen to that information. And then about 10% knew about handheld magnifiers, which are used by people with low vision to be able to access information, to read, and so on and so forth. So for most of the assistive devices like the Braille machine, screen readers like JAWS, NVDA, they were not well known to people, like voice over knowledge. It was pretty much below 10% knowledge about some of those assistive devices. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bonita, and thank you so much, Dr. Mapena, for your submission. Bonita raises very key issues about the numbers, and I'm glad this, Bonita is backing up these, all these sentences with statistics and numbers and data. And I know, Doctor, you are one person who is very, you know, key on data. We've had conversation off here, and you've really mentioned how you are interested in data, and of how the ministry is interested in data, and how, you know, and you've told us you need data. Everyone needs data. So, what do you think is still the reason for these low numbers?
Yeah, thank you very much. As Bonita has said, the research was done in three districts, and you might find that some of the interventions were not heralded in those districts,
yes,
and they are still in plan to be taken on. So I would say that why the number is still low, it's because of the funding gap. Otherwise, if we would have the money or the funds, we would able to provide for the needs of every child with special needs, every child with disabilities in the schools where they are. So what Bonita has said is dependent on where the intervention is that the Ministry of Education has implemented, the target districts. But we cannot say that people are not aware fully, because she has said some percentages that people are aware of the provisions. And also another thing that makes it not aware, as you may be aware, these materials, specialized materials, we normally import them from out. So how I wish these materials would be developed from Uganda so that people will know, like how you can go and buy a dress. So if they are made in Uganda, I'm sure that people can be aware. Then on the issue of policy, people not aware, as I told you, the Persons with Disabilities Act was approved 2020. So there is a need for dissemination. Before dissemination is done, people may not be aware. The National Inclusive Education Policy, I am sure some people are aware, because some consultations, regional consultations, were carried out, although the regional consultations were limited in a way. So because of funding, we could not bring everyone for regional consultations. But according to plan, we plan to disseminate the policies, the acts, so that government and every stakeholder is aware of what to provide for persons with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pamela. I think you've hinted on what I was just, the train of thought I had about what we can actually be able to do to improve access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technologies by persons with disabilities. So I also just realized from what you've mentioned that there's actually a lot to be done in order to bridge the digital divide for persons with disabilities. So looking to the future, beyond what we're doing right now, what else do you think can be done?
Yeah, thank you very much. What can be done is digitalizing the materials, specialized equipment to be developed in Uganda. And then if there are materials for access to be developed and posted on a website, but the website should be easily accessible without internet, because most of the website materials you access with internet, and this limits access, especially for persons with disabilities. So we can digitalize the materials and make them available. A person can access without internet. We have done this, although it was a pilot project targeting 20 schools through Korubiri. They are can access the materials without internet. So if that one can be done, then persons with disabilities will access. Another one is awareness. There is a need for continuous awareness and advocacy. There are so many people who are implementing programs for persons with disabilities, but you found even themselves are not aware. And the National Union of Disabled Persons of Uganda says, nothing for us without us. Mm. So maybe all of the interventions, if they can involve the end users, they can easily be aware of what is happening.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Bonita, do you have any additional thoughts on this?
Yes. Doctor has really said very many things that I am passionate about seeing them being implemented. And so disability is a development issue, and it will be hard to improve the lives of the most disadvantaged people in the world without addressing specific needs of persons with disabilities. So people's capabilities depend on the external conditions that can be modified by such actions that Dr. Pamela highlighted. And so we need more robust evidence to help make well-informed decisions about policy, about policies for persons with disabilities and programs. Understanding the numbers of persons with disabilities of each category and their circumstances can improve efforts to remove disabling barriers, just like she mentioned, and provide services to allow persons with disabilities participate fully, be included. So we need to collect more statistical and research data at all levels, the national level, at district level, at sub-county level, at dual needs assessment, with the help of stakeholders to formulate and implement policies that can help to achieve the national goals. Access and utilization can be improved through policy implementation, just like she said, so creating awareness about policies. Access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technology by persons with disabilities may also be improved through improved policy implementation. Creating awareness on the available assistive devices and technology, providing digital literacy skills to enable the persons with disabilities use the devices, but also working with disabled persons organizations in implementing all these changes. So access and utilization may further be improved through improved policy implementation. The policies are there, they are partially implemented, so we can work on that. Then also continuous awareness creation on the available assistive devices and technology so that people know this is what is available, yeah? But also provide them with digital literacy skills, trainings to be able, for them to be able to use the devices, because you will not give someone a braille or a Victor reader or a screen reader, and then how will they use them? So they need to be trained on how to use it, on how to maintain it, and continuous awareness creation is very important, very key. So as Dr. Pamela said, nothing for us without us. So we encourage and we advocate for organizations of persons with disabilities to be champions in advocating for policy change, in continuous awareness creation on the existing devices, on the Ugandan assistive devices on the Ugandan market, on how to train persons with disabilities to use assistive devices and technology, and involvement in digital skills and maintenance. So again, nothing for us without us. Organizations of persons with disabilities should be champions, working hand in hand with other civil society organizations and government to see that there is improved access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technology. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bonita.
I wanted to add on the training in relation to education. Once assistive technologies are provided, there is also need to train teachers who are going to teach persons with disabilities to be able to teach them rightly. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you for that addition. One thing that has stood out for me is the collaborative bit. As the Digital Human Rights Lab, we base so much on the principles of digital development. And when you say nothing for us without us, that speaks directly to number one principle, which is designing with the user. If you're doing advocacy, if you're doing any kind of interventions that are helping persons with disabilities, it is important that you involve them. Otherwise, you are going to build or come up with interventions that don't really speak to the needs. So I think it's important that you design with the user, be collaborative, which I think is also the last principle of digital development among the many. And from the conversation we've had here, we've seen you hinting most of them. For those that don't know the principles of digital development, it's important that you look up them up as we come up with interventions, as we do digital development work. What are some guiding principles? So moving forward, Dr. Pamela, we've had this conversation, and I know the conversation on digital inclusion hasn't just started. It has been around for years and ages. So I want to understand what has been the impact of the coronavirus pandemic when it comes to digital inclusion? Because from my understanding, even before the coronavirus pandemic, things were not to the best. And I just want to understand, how has this affected? Has it worsened an already worse situation?
Thank you very much. For persons with disabilities or children with disabilities, when COVID-19 came, it was declared that all schools close and children go back home. Children with disabilities require specialized skills, specialized knowledge to be able to learn. So they went home, the parents didn't know what to do with them. And some of the children with disabilities ended up dying because they did not understand. There is one who died in one of the district. He did not know the curfew time. So the police followed him calling and he was not hearing.
Yeah.
So they ended up shooting him. Some of the children with disabilities, because parents cannot manage to control them, they were all the time crying that take me to school. And the parents didn't have the knowledge on how to communicate with them, didn't have the knowledge on what to do. So some of them ended up running away and parents could not know where they have gone. It happened in one of the districts where a girl with hearing impairment decided to go to another home where there is another person with hearing impairment because they could communicate. So the COVID-19 affected children with disabilities, double marginalized, because they only benefit in education, in learning, when they are at school. So what can be done to this? Parents should be brought on board from the start. Another impact, when the COVID-19 came, it was abrupt. It was a new experience, especially in Uganda. Even the parents never knew that schools can be closed. So the Ministry of Education came up with a response plan to develop home learning materials. But when they were developing them, I think people did not think that these children at home will need specialized materials. So at first, there were no specialized materials. From the first phase of the homeschool learning material that were distributed, until the department responsible made noises and said, now how do we cater for these learners with disabilities? So working together with the partners, we developed materials into accessible formats, Braille, large print, putting them in audios, and also developing materials in sign language. If you check on National Curriculum Development Center, you see there homeschool learning materials which are signed to enable a child with hearing impairment to access. Then with the partners, there are some partners who provided tablets, because when these children went home, there is no Parkinson's machine at home, and they use the Parkinson's machine to write, so they could not answer all of those questions that were being asked. So they provided the tablets. We also procured Victor readers through support from GPE COVID-19 response, which was to enable a child, if he reads the question, he speaks to it, and then we'll be able to understand. And then people did not know that it will stay all this long. But what the government did when they opened up for schools to go, we really appreciate the government for understanding our core. All special schools, only special schools, were allowed to open fully. So as we talk now, all children with special needs in special schools are at school learning. So we appreciate the government for understanding the need of these learners, much as those in inclusive schools, they still followed the normal program because they study under a roof with other children without disabilities. So we could not get a teacher to come and teach those with disabilities only. But we appreciate the government for understanding the core.
I think that's really great to hear, Dr. Pamela. So maybe if we could just bring this home, Bonita. You belong to the community of practice on digital inclusion at the Digital Human Rights Lab. Mm-hmm. One of your many objectives is to ensure that everyone has access to ICTs while demanding for digital human rights. What exact efforts have you put in to the realization of this goal?
Thank you, Daniel. Our community of practice under the Digital Human Rights Lab, which we usually call COP, an acronym. So it is digital inclusion, and digital inclusion for minorities. And under this COP, the minorities that we have so far, it is persons with disabilities, organizations of persons with disabilities, and then sexual and gender minorities, youth, and then women. So our aim, or one of our objectives as a COP on digital inclusion, is to see that those minority groups are able to be included in using digital technology. They are equipped with digital skills. They are able to confidently and comfortably use the digital devices that are available, that they are able to also access them. Okay, so we have done research among those minority groups. We have done trainings on how to use online and digital materials in data collection, in writing reports, in sharing their information. Then specifically for our project on persons with disabilities as policy, as a member of the COP on digital inclusion, we have done this project on access and utilization of ICTs and assistive technology for persons with disabilities. And we intend to do trainings to equip them with knowledge on how to use ICTs available to them and assistive technology and devices. And so other stakeholders that are within our COP. And Digital Human Rights Lab has supported us in terms of funding, that is one, but also providing resources and materials that we can use in training, and then collaborating as COPs with other COPs. For instance, we will be collaborating with the COP on digital security to train, to include in their curriculum that they are developing, to say that it is inclusive, it can also cater for needs of persons with disabilities. So there is also that collaboration effort which the Digital Human Rights Lab ensures that we have as COPs. And for more information about our COP, digital inclusion, I'll refer our listeners to the Digital Human Rights Lab website, www.dhrlab.org. You can check out for more information and resources on COP on digital inclusion.
Thank you so much, Bonita. For our listeners, again, like Bonita said, visit www.digitalhumanrightslab.org or www.dhrlab.org to learn more about the COPs and the kind of work that we are doing. Bonita, lastly, as we close, we have a policymaker in our ministers, and I want you to speak directly to the doctor. As a researcher, you have an advisory function to the government and other stakeholders because you've interacted with the people on ground and you know what the needs are. What are some of the evidence-based recommendations to addressing the barriers to access and usage of ICTs and assistive technologies that you leave with the stakeholders today, specifically directing to doctor?
Thank you, Philip. Directing to doctor, she's among the policymakers, so she's representing them today.
Yes.
And she has really done a great job talking about policy making and interventions that the government is doing and those that are in the pipeline, those that they are piloting. Very good job that the government is doing. So some of the recommendations that we got from our participants in those four districts. One is to work with organizations of persons with disabilities to champion, just like already said, to champion all these processes, to be involved. Yeah, they have been involved, but we would like to see them more involved, like they have been. So let the involvement be increased. Let it be scaled up, that they are involved in policy implementation, they are involved in advocacy, they are involved in awareness creation on the existing policies, the strategies, the devices that are available on the market. Who are the service providers of these devices? Because people, we found out that they do not know even where these are being sold from. Mm. They don't know where to get the white cane from. So at least in our research, we discovered two service providers, that is Inclusive Participation and Enabling Services, both of which are located in Kampala. And we are happy to go with one of them, Enabling Services, on our dissemination workshop in Gulu with some devices to display and show people and talk to them about them. So they are happy to also be involved in such awareness. Tell people in their community that these are the service providers, this costs this, and so on and so forth. Then again, we would like to see the government involve at least like a representative of persons with disabilities in some government departments. They are there, but let it be scaled up, that there is this representative of persons with disabilities in every government department, mm-hmm. to be able to act as a check and balance, to mm-hmm. see that a policy that has been put in place is being implemented and how far has it been implemented. Yeah, so they can act as checks and balances so that we do not leave anyone behind and we reduce the digital divide, which is the aim of sustainable development goal, which the government of Uganda feeds into. And we want to achieve that goal without leaving anyone behind and reducing the digital gap. And then also we would recommend to the government if they can work with local manufacturers, yeah, here in Uganda, to produce some of the assistive devices that are imported. So most of these devices are expensive. The cost is very high. And like I said earlier, most of the persons with disabilities are not employed. They do some casual work. So the income is really very low. And they want to use this device, but they are not able to afford it, yeah? So if the government can work with some local manufacturers to see that some of the products can be locally manufactured here or locally assembled, such that that will make the cost at least go down and someone can be able to afford such a device that they need. Or they can also create a mechanism of being able to pay for that device in some way, maybe some kind of installments and something like that, that they can afford, that really brings them, something that they can own, a mechanism they can work with, you know? So some of these, for instance, we see that they were implemented to emancipate women. Can we also borrow some of the things, the mechanisms, the strategies that were used to emancipate women, to use them to emancipate persons with disabilities, to lift them up?
Solid recommendations, Bonita. I think I just want to send this to Dr. Pamela And I'm really curious. Mm. You've had these recommendations which have come from a civil society perspective. Which of them are actually practical and achievable moving forward?
Achievable means what is the priority? To me, I feel all of them can be implemented, but what is hindering us is lack of evidence. We don't have data on different categories of children with disabilities. So even when you go to advocate, they will ask you, how many are totally blind? And what will they need if they are to be sent to school? So to me, all the recommendations, government can manage to do them. But government does not work alone. Mm. That is what we need to note. We work with partners, especially like this one of yours, the policy. Mm? So when you do an intervention, you are supplementing government programs. So strengthening collaboration and partnership, government can manage to do all of these recommendations that the study has found out.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pamela. And I think it's in line with the popular Africa proverb that says, if you want to go far, you move together. Mm-hmm. And I think we can borrow that as well for this. And in summary, Bonita, since we are hearing about policy and the work you've done, how can our audience get in touch with you? Those who want to learn more about the COP on digital inclusion, the Committee of Practice on Digital Inclusion, how do they join in case they're interested? Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Thank you, Daniel. Learning more about policy, accessing policy and our resources can be two-way. Policy can be accessed physically. We are located in Kampala City in Uganda on Plot 7, Kulubya Close in Bugolobi, but also online. We are very visible. On our website, www.policy.org, we are there, and our resources are there, our reports are there, the blog posts are there. We have a newsletter that comes out every month. It has most of the work that we do. We also have a Facebook page. We are also visible on Twitter at policy.org. Then on our COP Digital Inclusion, you can learn more about it from the Digital Human Rights Lab website, but also from our engagement lead of our COP, Ayesiga Habat, and from the engagement leads that we have some here, Philip, Ayazika, Daniel Odong, and Charity Mugasha, they can provide you with more information. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bonita. Thank you so much, Dr. Pamela. It's been amazing having you on set. And to our listeners, that is all from us today. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for being ardent listeners. Stay tuned and look out for the next episodes as we present to you voices and perspectives of human rights defenders in Uganda.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And if you have feedback or need to learn more about the Digital Human Rights Lab, visit www.digitalhumanrightslab.org, or you can follow us on Twitter, DHR Lab, or on Facebook as well, Digital Human Rights Lab. Till next time, from all of us to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.